You're listening to KSCO, Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, and San Jose, and 104 FM. This is From the Bookshelf. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for joining me.
Ruta Lee is my guest. You've seen her in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers and Witness for the Prosecution and tons of other films. And you saw her in episodes of every television show ever made and on game shows and talk shows. And now she's an author of a pretty hilarious memoir called Consider Your Ass Kissed. Ruta Lee, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
I thank you very much for that lovely introduction. And please do consider your ass kissed. Privileged to visit with you and your listeners, my dear.
Well, thank you so much for being here. It's really, really an honor to have you. And I've admired your work, you know, forever. In fact, as I was knowing that I was going to be speaking to you, I've been watching some of your stuff. And just the other day, I watched, I think it was your first episode of Perry Mason, which is over 60 years ago. Pardon me for saying so. And you were Connie Cooper. And you had a waist that was about 12 inches.
That's about it. It was 19, actually.
You look incredible. You look so incredible. And then it turns out, I know people hate spoilers, but this is 60 years old, so get used to it, people. you turned out in the famous, you know, courtroom scenes that end all of the Perry Mason episodes, and somebody just finally confesses and screams and cries. That's you. You're the.
Oh, I was the bad girl.
You were the murderer. Good.
You know, bad girls are so much more fun to play than good girls. Let's just put it that way.
And have you had an equal opportunity to play bad and good?
Yes. And I have to tell you that bad girls are much more fun. They have a lot more material is given them that I like. But I must tell you, for me, Perry Mason was a little bit like going to drama school, because I got to play so many different characters. Gail Patrick, who was a very big star in films in the 30s and the 40s and into the 50s, was the producer of the Perry Mason series.
Was that unusual for a woman to be the producer of a television?
Very unusual in that day, because we're talking in the 50s here, the late 50s. Yeah. And she was one of these wonderful women. In fact, I write about her in my book a little bit. She was one of these gorgeous, gorgeous women who didn't mind having young, cute Tootsies around her, because she knew who the hell she was and that she had contributed mightily to the film genre and now was producing. And she hired me a lot, and I owe a great deal to her. And I really loved it that every once in a while, I would be invited to their home to join in a dinner party or something. And I thought, whoa, I've really gone uptown when I, this young twerp, am now with these sophisticated, beautiful people. But it was truly a lesson in every way for me. And the most important lesson, I think, was that as a person who has gained some sort of celebrity, notoriety, whatever, that it is awfully nice if you are good to the people around you and share what knowledge you have and what experiences you've had. And giving is a big part of my credo. And I think part of it came from her.
Well, it's interesting that you say that it was like acting school, because you do, you know, you have to burst into tears, and you do. You did a pretty good job of bursting into tears. And you got slapped in the face hard in the episode, too. I'm sure you don't remember all these
details. No, I don't. But
I just watched it, so it's fresh for me.
Oh, I better look it up. But I'll come over to your house.
Oh, please do. But because I've got all of your gun smokes and your all the things. You did so many shows, and well, we'll talk about it in a minute. But mm-hmm. I know that you were a dancer. Had you trained as an actress? How did you become a performer, Ruta Lee?
Well, I think I owe it all to my adorable mother, who was certainly not a stage mother. She spoke English with a very, very heavy Lithuanian accent. And the older she got, the heavier the accent got. But she didn't know anything about theater or anything like that, but went to the movies if they had a few extra dollars to spend. You know, they came from Lithuania, my parents, and wound up in Canada because they couldn't get into the United States. The quotas were closed. And so I did my growing up in Montreal, and they would go to the movies, and she would say, "Oh, my daughter can do that tap dancing like Shirley Temple," you know. So I was Lithuania's answer to Shirley Temple. And my kindergarten teacher, who I owe my career to, Mrs. Jackson, said to my mother, "Mary, your little girl is a little different from the rest of the kids that I ever have in my classes." And she said, "Give her lessons, in music, give her dancing lessons, you know, whatever it takes." Well, my mother was very good, and she gave me lessons. And I always hated the practice, whether it was piano or dancing or anything else. Hated the practice. And to this day, Gary, I don't like the rehearsals. I love the performing. And so my career was set right from the beginning. But my mother said that I was also a very gregarious child, and there wasn't anybody that I met on the street that I didn't make a new friend. And I still kind of live that way. Love people, love entertaining. My husband used to say that I would introduce people to each other on the elevator. God forbid it wasn't a good run. And I'm still somewhat that way. So I owe my career to my mom. And in some ways, Gary, I have to say to the church, because naturally, for Lithuanians or for Poles or Germans or whatever, the church is kind of the center of social activity for foreigners. And so my first steps were taken on the church stage, whether it was singing or dancing or whatever. And if it hadn't been for the Lithuanian Catholic priest that started a parish here in Los Angeles, I don't think we'd be here, because he invited my mom and dad to come out and visit, and they fell in love with Southern California. Why not? It was February and up to our asses in snow in Montreal. And then they came out to California, and the palm trees were waving, and the birds were chirping, and the bees were buzzing, and the flowers were blossoming. And oh boy, it was gorgeous. And thanks to him, we had a place to stay when we first came to California. And so I guess my mom always thought, like I said, that I was Lithuania's answer to Shirley Temple. And thank God she lived a long time and was able to experience the pleasure of seeing her daughter achieve a little bit of what she hoped for me, you know, which is really great. And my dad, of course, was never big on compliments. But I knew that he said nice things about me, because the guys at the garage or at the gun club or wherever he was would say, "Boy, is your dad proud of you. You know, he's always talking about you." Never to me, but to the boys at the gun club, yes.
That's a little sad, but I guess I understand. So you mentioned that you didn't like rehearsing, but, you know, looking at your credits, which, you know, are incredible, I guess the most incredible thing is that, you know, they never end. It's not like you're retired. I mean, you just keep working. But one of the films that you made was with Fred Astaire, who I love. And he, you know, I know he was a taskmaster with his dancers and the rehearsals and all that. What was that like?
He was mostly a taskmaster with himself. He needed to do everything to the nth degree, you know. Unfortunately, I didn't get to dance with him. The only dancing I did in Funny Face was with all the girls in Think Pink.
Right.
That was
Thompson, right?
Yeah, Kay Thompson. And that was choreographed by Eugene Loring, who had the big ballet school here in Los Angeles that I went to. But that's the sad part, is that I didn't ever dance with Fred. I would have been terrified. I probably would have been tripping over my own feet, you know. But he was the nicest gentleman. And oh, how foolish of me. I think I may have talked about this in the book. I'm not sure. He became sort of a friend fan, not a fan because that's a stupid word to use, but he watched what I was doing in different television shows or guest appearances on talk shows or whatever. And he would write me little notes saying, don't wear that color the next time. The lighting didn't work right, blah, blah, blah. Wow. Or that was very good. You should do that again. Very sweet notes. And like the idiot child I am, did I keep them? No, I thought they'd be coming forever, you know.
Oh, right.
And I didn't keep those things that would have been so monumentally important now. Except my husband is the first one to say, or used to be the first one to say, that all of the treasures that I have in all of my houses, things that I've saved and saved and saved, are basically going to wind up on the back of a wagon taking them to the junk heap, you know? Well, and isn't it sad that that's what happens to our stuff?
I guess that's true. I mean, I have a lot of stuff and I really care a lot about it, but, you know, I only care about it while I'm alive and then I don't care. One of the things I have is a signed copy that Fred Astaire signed to me of his autobiography, Steps in Time. I got a chance to meet him once and I still
His daughter is a friend of mine who lives a couple of miles away from me here in Palm Springs, which is where I am right now. And we are very good friends, Ava Astaire. And she had a home in Ireland and I visited her there and we shot some of my Talk of the Town shows at her wonderful little cottage. And she took us out for mussels in the river that runs into the sea. And while we were out there, and there she is looking divine and her hair done and she's in darling little shorts and whatnot. And she slipped in the water and fell, and it's the greatest shot in the world to see this magnificent dancer's daughter, who was such a klutz that she fell on her ass, as we said, in the water. And great shots for the show. I'm sure that she won't be happy if I show it, but that's the way it is.
Well, you do talk about some of the great performers that you encountered in your career, Rudely, in your wonderful book, Consider Your Ass Kissed. I want to ask you about one of those. You made a movie called Sergeants 3, and that had Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr. in it. And I'm a big fan of Frank Sinatra. I saw him on stage many times. I never saw him exactly the way you saw him. In your book, you mention that he revealed to you, can you see where I'm going with this, Rudely? I'm trying to be polite.
Absolutely not. I have no idea what you're talking about. And anybody that's listening to us will simply have to get the book and figure out what you're talking about. But he was, Frank Sinatra was an enormous influence.
Enormous. That's what I'm asking you about.
Enormous in every way. Let's just put it this way. If I'd played those cards right, I might have been Mrs. Frank Sinatra.
Yes.
But I didn't. But he was absolutely wonderful. Well, you know, if you've seen him live, that he was totally mesmerizing as a performer on stage. And I don't know how this skinny little guy must have had all the girls screaming and yelling and rolling and fainting in the aisles at the Paramount or wherever the hell he was playing in New York. I was too young to have lived through that period. But when I saw him for the first time, now, mind you, I'd heard all of the recordings, those beautiful unrequited love songs that he does. Nobody can touch his grace and style in performing. And I was sitting directly under him, staring up at him, because his orchestra filled the dais of this nightclub that I was in. And he was on, the stage, and he was on a tiny little dais in front. And I was just awestruck by his performance and how mesmerizing and absolutely glorious a performer he was. And it was because of him that I got the job of Tyrone Power's little secret love in Witness for the Prosecution, which was a great boost for my life and career. And then thanks to Witness for the Prosecution, I got to be leading lady in Frank Sinatra's movie. So it's a beautiful circle that you have to get the book to read. It's not a big expensive book. You can buy it either hardback or the soft cover. And where am I? I'm on Amazon, of course. Okay. And of course at Barnes and Noble. And of course I would say, go to your local bookstore, give them the business. Everybody.
That'd be great. Yes. We like local bookstores.
I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf on KSCO. And we're talking this week with actress Ruta Lee. You've seen her in some great movies, including Seven Brides for Seven Brothers and Witness for the Prosecution and Funny Face. And you've seen her on television on Perry Mason and Gunsmoke and The Twilight Zone and tons of other shows. And on game shows, she was the host with Alex Trebek of High Rollers and was a frequent celebrity guest on Hollywood Squares, What's My Line and The Match Game. And she's just written a wonderful memoir, and it's called Consider Your Ass Kissed.
You mentioned in your book that you talked into a tape. You didn't do. Are you a writer? Do you consider yourself a writer? Will you be writing more?
I'm no writer, and let me tell you, Gary.
Yeah.
I hold in great esteem anybody who has to put their fanny in a seat and sit at a computer or typewriter or whatever they use and write a frigging book. It is so difficult. And more difficult than writing it, I think, is editing it and trying to figure out what you can live without, what has to come in. And all I've discovered in rereading mine to edit for mistakes, by the way, yours, I'm sure you noticed because you teach, that it is filled with errors. How in hell they went to print without a final sign off from me, I will never know. But I figure, that'll make it a collector's item. But the next printing is already, they're all fixed and done. The names are right and in the right places. But I think it's a very difficult process. So yes, I did sit with somebody who said, Ruta, you know, you tell the best stories and make us laugh and so on and so forth. You should do a book. And so for 10 years, I kept saying, yeah. I will. And finally he said, you know, I'm going to come over and record. He was in Dallas. He said, I'll come to Los Angeles. I'll sit with my tape recorder and I will get everything that you have to say. You'll just tell your stories. Well, that's what we did for like 3 weekends in a row or so. And I talked and he recorded and then he transcribed. Of course, in the process of transcribing, he also transcribed every dog bark, every telephone ring, every time I said, excuse me, I have to go to the John now. You know, all of that got in there. So now that's a lot of editing you have to do of extraneous stuff. But it was easier for me because, look, Gary, I write about it in the book. I failed typing 4 times. I kicked me out of the class and said, oh, go take shop.
Well, it all turned out great because it really is like, I mean, I feel like I know you and that you've been talking to me, you know, for a week as I've been reading your book. And
I'm so happy to hear that. I wanted my voice to be in the writing.
And, yes, I was worried about having you on the radio because I don't want to have to bleep you out having heard your voice.
And look at the garden path you were leading me down, Frank Sinatra.
Oh, yeah.
Enormity.
Well, I'm just curious about that, rudely as you can imagine. And I could also tell that you'd been working on the book for a while because, well, sadly, a lot of the people that you talked about are no longer with us. In fact, Alex Trebek, who we all love, wrote the foreword for your book, and I know that you were partners with him on
High Rollers.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit about your whole game show career, because I think when I was younger, I don't want to say when I was a little boy because I don't want to be insulting.
Well, yes, you were a little boy, because
when I was a little boy, you were ubiquitous on game shows, you know, on my TV screen.
What a beautiful word, ubiquitous. It's so rarely used. Ooh, that was nice. Thank you. I'll put that in the next book.
Good.
The game shows were wonderful, Gary, for me. The game and the talk shows. Because most of America had gotten to know me as a character on the lineup or on Perry Mason or on Love Boat or whatever. Always a character. The game shows introduced me as Ruta, the real Ruta. and people got to know me and hopefully like me and tune in again, or if not, then they could tune out. But I built not fans, but friends. And that showed, because whenever I was out on the road doing a musical or a straight play, comedy, whatever, people would come backstage and they wouldn't say, Miss Lee, can I have your autograph? Which, of course, I did every night after the show. But I'd hear, hey, Rudely, we're doing barbecue Sunday. Want to come over, honey?
Oh, nice.
Now, isn't that sweet to have that sort of lovely rapport with people so that they feel that, well, and why shouldn't they know me well? Because television sets are, you know, sometimes people were watching me on the late night shows, you know, whether it was Johnny Carson or whoever, through their toes, you know. And right. I spend time in the bathroom with people. I spend time in the kitchen or the den or whatever, you know. And so that was why I loved the game shows. And I loved the energy and the brain power you kind of had to put to use.
Which you did, right? I mean, you competitively played the games when you were
a
contestant. I mean, you were into it. Did you find that it hurt your reception as an actress? In other words, if you'd been on a game show and they knew you as Rudely and you're so funny, and then you come out on stage to do a play or a musical, do you think people it was harder for them to accept you in character now that they know you so well?
I don't think so. I think that when you go to see someone in a show that you know, you feel, you urge them on emotionally. I think there's kind of like, it's almost like your mom watching you, you know, and wishing you well and going along. And well, you know, audiences are amazingly strange and unique beasts in that sometimes I don't know whether weather has something to do with it or whether one or two things have happened to people spiritually or emotionally, but sometimes an audience will laugh hilariously at, let's say, a joke line, and other times there'll be a little titter, and it's a general feeling that happens, and I have never been able to explain it, but it is truly either a warm breathing gentle beast, or it can be a very mean lion, you know, that's coming after you. And it's a very interesting experience for any actor to go through. Fortunately, I think if you are able to somehow, and you know, Gary, this is a secret that I don't talk about very often, but when I'm in the theater, whether it's in the round or a straight theater house, I try to make eye contact with every person in that audience at least once.
Hmm.
So that I'm personalizing the play or the musical or whatever. If you can just touch eyes, lock eyes once. And that's not the easiest thing in the world to do.
It doesn't throw you off as an actress to... you know, how do you break the fourth wall in this way of looking at someone in the face?
No, I've been breaking the fourth wall from the time I came out of the womb, I think. And I don't mean to tell you that I lose character, but somehow eyes connecting, and they are the mirrors of our soul. And I cannot help but feel that you pull somebody along with you into what you're feeling and what you're doing if you make eye contact with them.
We're chatting with Rudely, and she's a wonderful actress and performer, and she's just written a book called Consider Your Ass Kissed. And I want to ask you, you know, I don't know what it would be like to be so incredibly beautiful. I mean, when I saw you, where I was just talking about this Perry Mason episode that I was watching, and the minute you come on screen, I mean, it's like, well, there's a lot of people in show business who are pretty, but you're just like, whoa. And I wonder, you know, especially now in the Me Too era, when people are talking a lot about this incident with Frank Sinatra aside, were people chasing you around the casting couch? Did you ever encounter that kind of thing?
Do you know that if they were, I didn't recognize it? I have always been hail fellow well met, you know, and laughter for me is the saving grace in any situation. And with guys, I was always very popular with the boys, but I think I was popular with the boys because it would be, hey, come on, Ruta, we're going to have a beer. And we could sit and tell body stories or do whatever it is. And I always felt like the guys were more my friends than they were wolves chasing after me or potential lovers. You know, that just never, ever really affected my life. And like I said, if somebody ever made a pass at me that was unwarranted, I don't think I recognized it. And if I did, I probably laughed about it.
There was never a producer who said, well, we'd like to have you in this show, Miss Lee.
Never. Never ever happened. And I don't know whether, I mean, I'm not exactly a goody two shoes, but you know, it just, I don't know. I think probably my sense of humor and my joy of life and living exuded. And so that never, ever, ever did I have that problem. I'm sorry to say.
You're insulted, are you? That
yes, I'm insulted. Something got, well, you know, I never had boobs, and somehow during my beginning years in television and in movies, et cetera, et cetera, large breasts were kind of tantamount to being sexy and beautiful, you know. Mm-hmm. And I always, in fact, I did this on the Tonight Show. Oh, I think I wrote about this, that I always had a general line that said, I don't have any breasts. I have a tattoo on my chest that says, in case of rape, this side up. And I did that on the Hollywood Squares one time. And you should have seen the suits running around trying to figure out whether it could air or not.
You could tell that joke. Yeah, you couldn't tell that joke today, I'm sure.
But darling Phyllis Diller had the greatest line in the world. Yeah. If I ever use that line, and she was in the audience one night when I was doing a show, and I might have used that line. And she said, Ruta, remember that falsies, you know, bust pads were a must for me. And she said, Ruta, you have worn so much rubber in your bra that you have erased what little tits you had. That's my Phyllis, my adorable Phyllis Diller.
Well, on the other hand, Ruta Lee, I mean, you look pretty nice figure-wise on TV. You're saying you were wearing a lot of padding then?
Oh, Lord, yes, yes.
Well, but then in the 60s, you know, in the Twiggy era, and you were still beautiful.
Oh, yes.
Then it kind of became more fashionable to have.
Thank you, God, yes. Yeah. And now, as a very old lady, okay, I am happy to say that I don't have boobs hanging down to my waist.
There you go, yeah.
So there is an advantage when you get older. But Dean Martin, who dubbed me Loudy when we were working.
Loudy, right.
Everybody had a name, and I'm Loudy. And he said, God didn't give Ruta breasts. He gave her a set of speakers.
Well, I want to talk to you about some of the TV shows you're in. You know, it's when I like to watch old TV shows a lot. And it seems like there's almost like a repertory company of people who show up on every show.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned in your book that the producers liked you because you were a quick study or you were good at it. I mean, and you're very beautiful, of course. And so you were pretty much on every single episodic drama that was made when you were working studying.
Yes. Yes, the 60s, the 70s. I was really very, very fortunate. And I think what happened is if I did one episode of something, let's say at Warner Brothers, that was the machine turning out Westerns and detective shows and I don't know what all they were doing. If you guessed it on one and you had fun with the crew and the director and everybody, if you made it a lark and where people were not saying, is she ready yet? Or come on, let's go. Or you knew your lines, you did your stuff. You did it well, you did it fast and furiously because time was of the essence on these things. And I think if you did well on one, then the other director said, how was it working with her? Oh, great. You know, let's hire her for this. So I worked a lot at Warner Brothers, for starters, and all the studios, Paramount, I worked a lot there too, but they were making movies, but basically what was keeping everybody alive was television. And thank God I was sure a part of it. And it was, oh boy, great experiences.
I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf on KSCO, and we're talking with actress Ruta Lee, who has just written a wonderful memoir called Consider Your Ass Kissed. And right before the break, we were talking about all the wonderful television shows you did, Ruta Lee.
You did so many of them, and I wonder, and I was asking you about this when we were talking about Perry Mason, do you ever like forget them? Like you're turning the channels at home, and all of a sudden, there you are, and you're, wow, I don't remember doing a Highway Patrol.
You're absolutely right. And it's funny that you should mention Highway Patrol, because as I recall, I did more than one, but I think one of them was my first helicopter ride.
Oh.
Where they landed a helicopter out on a point somewhere out in Malibu, and I jumped in, and no doors on the helicopter, all open on the sides. And that's when I found out that the force keeps you in your seat where you don't fall out. It was just amazing to me. A wonderful experience. And of course, darling, what the hell was his name? Help me
Roger,
with
it. Roderick Crawford.
Yes. Broderick Crawford. I understood that he was often falling down drunk when they were shooting, but I never saw that. But then again, I never saw passes made at me. So what the hell?
You did a couple of shows with David Janssen. He's one of my favorite.
Yes.
You were Richard Diamond, and you did The Fugitive. So,
yes.
Any memories of him?
Well, one of the memories is that in one of the shows, I didn't even appear. Just my legs appeared, and they used my legs for the entire thing, which was kind of interesting. I knew him quite well because he was one of the early members of the Thalians, my group, which is basically Hollywood for mental health. And oh, let me urge your wonderful listeners to go to the Thalians, thalians.org, and you'll see all about what we do and how for years we have been Hollywood for mental health. And David Janssen was one of our early members and appeared in shows for us and all of that good stuff. And
I understand he was a very funny guy, even though you don't see that in his movies.
No, you don't see that in David. And you know who else was one of the funniest people God put on this earth? Was Alex Trebek.
Oh.
Nobody ever really got to see that marvelous twinkle because he was always kind of stoic and darling, charming, you know, but he had the wildest sense of humor. And being born of a Russian father, he knew how to do every accent imaginable, and especially East Indian accents. Oh my God, what he would do. Yeah, my sweet
boy. Too bad we didn't see that on Jeopardy. That was
no, it is a shame. But fortunately, he also helped me a lot with the Thalians. Whenever I asked him to come and do a voiceover for us or host or do the game or whatever the case may be, anything to raise money for mental health. And by the way, we were the first building that went in at the Cedars-Sinai complex in Los Angeles, which is huge. And it was the Thalians Community Mental Health Center. And it's still there and in perpetuity. But we have now switched from worrying about from pediatric through geriatric care. We're very, very concerned about returning veterans and their mental health. And these are the young men and women that are willing to put their lives on the line for us wherever we send them. And yet when they come back, instead of getting the best that America has to offer, in many cases, they fall through the cracks. And so we joined up with UCLA and Operation Mend. Operation Mend takes care of the broken and fractured bodies, limbs, heads. And we Thalians are trying to heal the broken and fractured mind and spirit. And so I beg anybody that might have a few dollars available, whether it's $2 or $200 or $200,000. Just think about our returning vets and go to thethalians.org and you can make a contribution, say a prayer, think a good thought, whatever. Thank you.
Well, that's important work that you do. And it's good that you and your friends use your celebrity to accomplish some wonderful things. And was it Debbie Reynolds who got you into the Thalians originally?
Pretty close. I came in about 5 years after it had started. And Hugh O'Brien was our first president. Matthew Whiting was our second president. Debbie was the third president. Donald O'Connor was the fourth. Then I became the president and stayed there for about 14 years. And Debbie came back from being on the road, paying off all of her crappy husband's debts, you know, the millions of dollars that she went into.
Every husband stole everything from her.
Yeah, everybody took everything. And she came back and she said, okay, I'll be president for a while. You be chairman of the board. And then she left on the road again. So I played both roles for a lot of years. And I'm very, very grateful. You know, that's where I first used my expression, consider your ass kissed. Yeah. Because I meant it in from the bottom of my heart, in total gratitude to those who were kind enough to reach into their pocketbooks and wallets and give me money for the Thalians. And it was my deepest and most sincere thank you was to say, consider your ass kissed. And my darling friend, whom you may know, George Pinocchio, who is the Hollywood reporter for ABC television, the red carpet man, I call him, said to me one day, he said, Roots, if you ever do a book, that should be the title of it. And so I took him at his suggestion. That's what I did. And there are some places that get a little nervous about it. I mean, in Dallas, the morning show.
Dallas. They wouldn't have your title on there.
They wouldn't have the title. They blocked out the title. they blocked out ass. And all I could think of was, well, now, wait a second. Why are we being so cold-nosed about this? If Jesus rode into Jerusalem on an ass, surely I can kiss it.
You're hilarious. Rudely, in addition to all of the appearances on talk shows, and I know you were on all of them, you also had your own talk shows. You're an interviewer yourself. How did that happen?
A girlfriend and I, Toni Holt Kramer, she had been a Hollywood reporter and columnist. I had never done anything like that. And another girlfriend of ours said, why don't you take over this Talk of the Town, which had been a cutesy pie little show. Well, it remained a cutesy pie little show. We were national in hopscotch places, you know, all over the country. But it was a great opportunity to do wonderful interviews. And of course, being somewhat celebrated and known ourselves, Toni and I were able to always get right up close at events, whether they were premieres or whether they were openings of stores or whatever the case may be, any kind of big major event that got people and would be good for our show, we were right up close to, which was just wonderful. And we got some of the best interviews imaginable, you know, from Bob Hope and my God, name any star, Clint Eastwood, you know, boy, he was tough to get to. Clint is always reticent about doing anything like that. And it took me 20 years, Gary, of pleading, begging, cajoling to get him to be our honoree at the Thalians. Finally, I said to him, Clint, my birthday is coming up. May 30th is my birthday. I want you to give me a present. And that is to say, yes, you will be our honoree at the Thalians, where we build a show around that person. And he said, okay, I'll tell you what, my birthday is the 31st of May. You give me a present and tell me I don't have to come. But he did come, and he was a gracious, beautiful, beautiful host. He's absolutely charming and adorable. Oh, I should have been Mrs. Clint Eastwood. No, he's had too many of those.
Well, you didn't get married when you were 22 years old.
No. I was well into my 30s when I got married. And frankly, there was a time when Rona Barrett and I used to say, you know, we're going to wind up at Del Webb Sun City, sitting in our rocking chairs, going, and as the golfers go by, we'll sit and rock and we'll look at them and say, now, did you have an affair with him or did I? And she got married late in life as well. And so we both had our rocking chair burning ceremony and went on into married life. And I must say, married life is a very, very good place to be if it's a good marriage. I had 46 blissful years with my husband. And that was, I think, a blessing for all the do-good stuff that I do in life. You know, my husband used to say, Ruta, if you spent 10% of the time on your career that you spend on your do-good activities, then you could tell Barbara Streisand to get off the world. And he's quite right. I do spend more time in what I think are necessary things for the planet and for our population. And I'm blessed with energy to do it. So why not?
Well, I'm glad you do it. What about performing? Are you still actively working? Are you doing something?
Well, now, yes, I'm still doing some of my talk shows, which we film at my house, and that works out very well. Interview shows for lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But look, I am now 86 years old. I refuse to be 86 years old. I feel like I'm 36, you know, mm-hmm. And the parts simply aren't there. I'm not a leading lady anymore, nor do I want to be Ma Frickert. You know, it's just not me. So the roles aren't there, but I'm still doing some things, and I can still do MAME. I can still do Hello Dolly if I want to get out on the road and work hard. But I kind of like what you do better than anything. You asked me the question and I never answered it. I enjoy very much asking the questions. And I think very much like you, I think what Mr. and Mrs. America would like to know. And sometimes they're rather mundane, but what the heck? It works. People want to know about celebrities and what their lives are like.
It's interesting for you because you know them, so you can have your friends on and ask them questions that you probably never asked them in a friend situation that you would ask them on.
Precisely. Yes, precisely. And I can get to more people. I can call and say, you want to come over and we'll do a show and we'll film. And usually they'll come over and we'll have a cocktail or something while they're waiting. And it's quite wonderful. I enjoy it very, very much.
Well, the book, again, is called Consider Your Ass Kick. I didn't say
not
it.
Kick.
Consider Your Ass Kissed. That's yes. Nice of you to say, by the way.
And consider Your Ass Kissed. If you don't get the book, then consider your ass kicked.
Okay. And the author, Ruta Lee. Gosh, I'm just so honored that you spent some time with me and our friends on From the Bookshelf. Thanks so much.
Will you please promise me this, yeah, that if you come my way, you have my phone number, call me and we'll do this in person.
Oh, I'd love that.
And where we can touch and hug and say hello. I would love for you to see my California Los Angeles house, which is a beautiful old house. It's one that Rita Hayworth and Orson Welles lived in. And I keep rubbing my ass on the walls, assuming the glamour will cling.
Well, you want Rita Hayworth's ass, not Orson Welles's ass.
Oh, you son of a gun, you. How right you are.
That's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and will come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to our podcast wherever you subscribe to podcasts, and you can like us on Facebook. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for listening.